is the Capricorn FM podcast.
Let's stay in the province and talk to the issues that we were speaking about earlier, raised by the Premier, concerns on gender-based violence cases. And I was saying earlier that there were cases that were noted that were, of course, concerning. But the other issue, there was the Command Councillor as well. Mr. Premier, good evening. Welcome to Progressive Talk.
Good evening. And Amaline, good evening to your listeners also.
Good evening indeed. You have raised concerns on cases of gender-based violence that we're still struggling with here in the province.
Yes, not only gender-based violence, the kind of violence that we're seeing in the province here, it's terrible, in fact.
Mm.
It's shocking. It's in such a way that it's unprecedented.
Mm.
We have never had this kind of violence in this province in particular before. So, I mean, even during the apartheid era, we haven't seen our people killing each other like this. So, for us, it's a cause for concern. It's something that needs immediate action. It is against that background that we are saying we need to stand up as a community, as a society,
mm.
not only as government, but all stakeholders must stand up and do something about this and say enough is enough, like we always say.
Mm.
But we must also say it in action. I get about level.
Yeah. but talking about, so it would be obviously prudent that when you have a challenge, you try to establish the root cause. And this is a conversation we generally have. But you're speaking mm-hmm. about the profoundness of the violence here, the dastardly nature of it. Is there anything that can be attributed to what we're seeing that you're saying is unprecedented?
You know, when you come up with the features and characteristics of a Sikh society, this is one of the, of in fact, this is the resultant factor of it. Because at the core of it, it's the way the society the way the society fends for itself, you mm. get that,
mm-hmm.
and then as a result, people tend to develop anger. Like, I mean, it's human nature to be angry at times,
mm.
but the most important thing is how do you control your anger?
Mm.
People tend to develop some form of anger, develop built up anger that end up exploding in a very long time.
Mm.
And when it explodes, it causes this kind of things. So that is why it cannot be one stakeholder that deals with the matter, because that's a societal issue. It's a societal ill.
Mm.
It needs the society in its entirety to deal with it. You know?
Yeah.
Well, government can come in with what you would call corrective measures,
mm.
Enforcement, regulation, but that alone is not enough. You also need the civil society to come in and deal with the issue of the ethics, the ethics of a human person,
mm.
the personality board within a person,
mm.
you know.
Mm.
Once we can win that battle, I am sure that we'll say we are winning the war.
What kind of instruments can we use to win that battle? Is it education? What else?
Education and exerted effort,
mm.
you know, on economic development. Because in some instances you find that is because you find in a situation where you've got a couple, one spouse is working, the other one is not working, and that imbalance causes problems.
Mm.
It causes friction within the family, friction that mounts up and end up coming up with this kind of thing, being violent and all this kind of thing.
Mm. Mm.
So that is why I am saying it's a matter that needs the entire society. And as government, we must lead that crusade of getting the entire society involved.
when you talk about, Mr. Premier, an intervention like looking socio-economic issues and looking at economic issues, and we know where we are as a country at the moment, exacerbated by the pandemic. You had a 3 months or so ago, you had requested the MECs to set up a task force or a task team, rather. What work has been done? What kind of reports are you getting there?
That is why I'm saying what I'm saying, that the involvement, that committee led by MEC, they are doing a very good work, a very good job, because they are involving other stakeholders, society, Barutis, the clergy, and all these kind of people. But I think they must also go down to the youth, young people, go to schools, come up with programs for the schools, you know, at primary school, at secondary school. It may take long to deal with the entire society. But at the same time, whilst we're doing that, government also, together with all political parties in parliament, all political parties in parliament must put their heads together and say, this is what we are going to do in terms of this constitution, more especially when it comes to the last bastion of hope that we have, which is the police and the army. Once you start seeing criminals, thugs are taking the police and the army, then you must know that you are actually gravitating towards civil war, you know, because you are gravitating towards a gangster society, a gangster government. At some stage, the thugs will take over this government and run this government if we are not careful. So what we need to do is to look into this constitution and see as to whether the constitution is giving sufficient powers to the law enforcement officers, the police and the army. And then if that is not the case, we come up with something that will actually make the police different from an ordinary individual when it comes to the law enforcement, you know.
Yeah.
So that at the end of the day, you've got a constitution. You know, this morning I was on another radio station making an example with one colonel who was shot in his house in the early hours of the morning, you know. I was saying to the presenter there, look, had that colonel shot his killers and killed them. Just imagine the kind of noise that we would have had in the within our society. You know? There would have been this and that to justify what those people were doing in that area, and to vilify the colonel. In fact, the colonel would actually have been suspended by now had he killed his killers. But if we had a constitution that says a policeman is different from an ordinary citizen, it's not just a civilian, an ordinary civilian, it's something else. And then you've got specific laws and rules for the police, stringent also, but they must be in the position. They must be different from us, you know. They must be different from us in such a way that if he decides, he uses a correct discretion of using the kind of weapons that he's having, it must not just be an ordinary civilian court that judges him.
Okay, and Mr. Premier, I still have you on the line. The Command Council met, and what is the latest coming from the Command Council?
The Command Council met today as routine, just to get the report as to what is happening in the province. Are we getting this second wave that we are hearing about? We realize that at least as a province, we are still contained. Our containment measures are still in place. The Department of Health is still on top. Government is still on top of the situation. And the other things that we had there is basically the usual stuff that we all accept, that the financial results are that the departments are receiving financial results, their financial results from the Auditor General. Very soon the Auditor General will be out. will be going out and announcing as to how the department are performing. But we seem to be very happy with what is happening in this province when it comes to that. Most government departments are improving, have improved, in fact, from what they were in the previous financial year.
And if we're to get the second wave, what is the report saying? Are we ready as a province?
Absolutely. We are very ready. We are combat ready as this problem. Remember, even in the first wave, you remember we said we are ready for the full-blown, surge in the first wave that we had. Already we had our facilities ready, waiting for whatever eventuality that may come. Because as you have noticed, our planning was thorough. We planned that we are not going to use the money to come up with new structures elsewhere. We are going to develop and improve the structures that we have so that even after this pandemic, we must be in the position to can still have those structures to utilize, because we have already anticipated, as the World Health Organization had warned us, that this virus is going to be with us for a longer period of time. It's not going to leave very early. So therefore, we said if that is the case, we don't need to come up with temporary structures. Let's build or upgrade the current facilities, the hospitals that we are having, so that they can be combat ready anytime. When you get a full-blown surge, we must be in the position to can say, as Limpopo, we are ready to accommodate our patients.
Right, and I've seen you've gotten reports around the water projects, water relief projects. What is being said there? Are they able to get to the different communities, supply water and relief to the public?
You know, if there are two sore points that are always troubling, giving me sleepless nights in this province, is water and road. You know, those are the two main issues that are giving me sleepless nights for now. When it comes to the usual stuff like health and education, at least we can see that we're making progress. But when it comes to water and roads and road infrastructure, we still a little bit backwards, because the backlog in 2014 when we took over, we had a huge backlog because we had not built a road in the previous 3 years prior to 2014. We had serious problems with our water project. You'll remember the Giani water project and many other water projects, major water projects that we had. But the reports that we are receiving now is that it would seem like we are making headway. We are actually seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Very soon our people will be drinking water.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Premier. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.